I have no other names left on the public comment sign-in sheet, so I will now open the floor to the commissioners. Commissioners, any questions, comments? Commissioner Secretary Butler?
Mr. Chairman, I have four questions for the department and three questions for the developer.
Go ahead.
All right. So for the department, one of the goals of the TIF district is creating or improving new roads and bridges. Can you describe how this plan was developed?
So as I, again, for the record, Chip Hastings, as I mentioned as part of the presentation, the North Branch Framework Plan really acts as the basis for the TIF plan. The infrastructure improvements necessary were identified as part of a year-long process starting in 2016. We use a North Branch Framework Plan to guide us as far as the objectives of the TIF plan, both in terms of the financing and the needs.
So that the information is from 2016?
It started in 2016. It's been an ongoing, almost three-year process now to identify the needs and a way for paying for them.
Just a second, Secretary. We have Commissioner Sheinfeld here, if you wanted to add to the answer.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm Rebecca Sheinfeld, Commissioner of the Chicago Department of Transportation. To add to what Chip described as the process, I want to reiterate that due to the size and complexity of this project, CDOT has been heavily involved. This has also gone through the plan development process, and so many of the traffic planning requirements are generated through that process. I'd like to note that this project has undertaken professional traffic studies pursuant to CDOT's rules and regulations, held to professional standards for the generation of projected traffic patterns and traffic demand. Those studies have been reviewed by CDOT's professional engineers and, after back and forth, ultimately approved and found acceptable and held to the highest standards. I'd like to note that I think it's a red herring that there are calls for an independent, quote-unquote, traffic study. The fact is that these traffic studies done for this project meet the standards that the city sets for itself and for all major developments and any planned development coming before it, and it has been reviewed at length and found to be acceptable and professionally done and appropriate for the plans put before us. As Chip noted, a lot of the infrastructure called for in this TIF proposal originated from the North Branch Framework Plan process, and since that time, starting in 2016, we have continued to build on that, given additional review and information about changing land use patterns in the area and additional time for further study. And we find that the plan for infrastructure investment, for transportation infrastructure in particular, will provide significant benefits for the area, reestablishing the grid, adding and improving river crossings, improving signalization, encouraging multimodal movement, and will be complemented by major projects on the edge of this area, for example, the Ashland-Elston-Armitage intersection reconfiguration, which is a priority for the department, and we are in the planning phase for now. I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Commissioner Reifman, do you want to add something?
I just wanted to add one point, which is, Commissioner, this project will be developed in phases, and the plan development requires that the developer submit an updated traffic study for each phase as it comes through to be sure that the numbers are validated. I don't know that that goes to the point here for the overall planning of infrastructure, because I think both Department of Planning and Development and the Department of Transportation believe this establishes a good framework for those improvements. But the developer will be required to update those traffic studies as development occurs.
Great, thank you. That answers my question.
Go ahead.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add, or I can move on?
Go for it. Go, Secretary.
Okay, great. Thank you. I believe the department mentioned that there were certain costs, infrastructure costs, that would be incurred by the developer that are not covered by the TIF. Is that correct? And if so, what's the dollar amount of those costs not covered by the TIF that will be incurred by the developer?
So, yes, that's correct. A couple of points. There are current estimates are about close to $1 billion in infrastructure that's necessary. We've identified $490 million that we're comfortable, that are regional infrastructure improvements that we're comfortable supporting on a reimbursement basis. There are, I defer to the developer to correct this, but there's at least a couple hundred million dollars in infrastructure costs specific to their site that they'll be responsible for that we are not contemplating supporting with TIF. There are other costs that were work in progress that we're going to have to identify related to the metro station, the balance of the 606 costs that we'll have to identify in the future.
All right, I'll follow up with the developer on that point. Just another question for the department. How much is generated in property taxes today by this area that's contemplated being designated a TIF?
Thank you for asking that question. Perhaps I should have included that in the presentation. The total increment, the total property taxes paid in the 100-plus acre designation area is about $6 million.
I'm sorry, what's the number again?
$6 million.
$6 million?
$6 million.
Thank you. And the last question for the department, what's the department's experience working with Sterling Bay on other projects?
From a TIF perspective, from a financial incentives perspective, I can only speak to the bureau in which I manage. I have no experience.
Hand it off to Commissioner Reifman for that.
So I'll defer to the commissioner to speak to other experience on the subject.
We have a long-standing relationship as a city with Sterling Bay. I think that, you know, it was spoken about a little bit in the hearing today. It's unfortunate that Alderman Burnett is not here. You heard from Armando Chacon in terms of the role Sterling Bay has played in the development of, say, of Fulton and the West Loop. You know, some of the key projects that Sterling Bay led include the timely delivery of the McDonald's headquarters, which was a critical element for the development of the West Loop and the overall plan to attract companies back to the city, and was the first $4 million payment into the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund. In addition, one of the commitments that Sterling Bay made in connection with the McDonald's headquarters was the creation of the West Loop Library, which opened up about within the last month. So we have long experience with them. They developed the C.H. Robinson site, which is located within the TIF district, a little bit to the north. It might be included in the PD, actually. I think it is. Yeah, it is included in the PD as well, C.H. Robinson. So they are very reputable, and the communities that have worked with them have had tremendous success with them and positive experiences in terms of their development and commitments.
Great. Thank you so much, Commissioner Reifman. Now I have questions for the developer. So let's pick up on where we left off in terms of the infrastructure costs not covered by the TIF. How do you plan on covering those?
Dean Marks, Sterling Bay. The developer will be personally funding those costs together, potentially in a partnership with an infrastructure group.
Okay. Next question. What's the scope and magnitude of this project? You know, it's vast. How does that compare to the projects, other projects that you've completed in the city?
This is an exceedingly large project for the city, or for any city, frankly. Typically, our projects have been, you know, significant buildings of scale. This project will not all occur all at once, so it'll be occurring in phases as it goes, and so we expect it to chunk out very consistently with other projects we've done in the city.
24,000 new permanent jobs. What types of jobs do you contemplate will be created by this development?
All sorts of professional services jobs, accounting, law firms, any type of vendor services representative of the tenancies in our other buildings.
So those will be permanent jobs?
Permanent jobs.
New employers to the city, or moving people from one building to another?
Our goal is always to bring new employers to the city.
And can you give us a preview of who you hope to have in this area?
We're constantly talking to tenants throughout the city, the suburbs, and out of state. But as for those discussions, I can't disclose any of them, unfortunately.
Commissioner Reifman has some comments.
And Dean, maybe you could, like, again, some of the, why don't you give a couple of the examples of companies that you've built for here in Chicago?
Thank
so
you.
WPP.
Sure, no problem. WPP, the largest global advertising firm. McDonald's, obviously, was a relocation from the suburbs into the city. Google was a consolidation of multiple offices into their 1K headquarters. Dyson's headquarters in the West Loop. Glassdoor's headquarters in the West Loop. Sara Lee was a relocation into the city as well.
Great, thank you. I believe my last question, we've heard a lot about diversity and inclusion as relates to the jobs that are being created by this project. Can you speak about diversity and inclusion within Sterling Bay?
Certainly. We are devoted to creating a diverse and inclusionary workforce. At Sterling Bay, we have 56% female workforce and 13% minority workforce, and we're constantly striving to improve that.
Does your senior leadership team represent those same percentages?
Our senior leadership team slightly ticks down on those numbers, but all of our employees, our key employees, are offered the opportunity to participate in ownership in the company.
So how do you define key employees in terms of ownership, participation?
Sure.
Excuse me, let me finish my question, please. To whom are those equity participation interests offered?
Sure. Employees who have been there for a significant portion of time and who contribute in a significant role based on their involvement in projects as determined by merit.
So if I look on your web page and see your 21 senior leadership, members of your senior leadership team, as to find how many are women and ethnic minorities that actually have equity in your company?
Sure. Equity ownership in the company approximates those figures set forth earlier. So,
sorry, could you remind me what those figures are again?
56% female and 12% minority.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other questions? Vice Chair Newsom?
I have a couple of questions as well, and I believe maybe my first questions would be directed to Johnson Research. I believe that's the TIF consultant that was used. It's my understanding that we are looking at approximately 300 pins included in this project.
That's correct.
Of that 300, can you tell me the number of productive pins? In other words, those pins that are producing funding taxes.
Of the 350...
Just state your name to start.
Oh, my name is Ann Maroney with Johnson Research Group. Of the 315 pins, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are tax-exempt. 8 are tax-exempt. Ten are... Final answer. 10 are tax exempt,
okay.
And the rest are producing increment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and this goes to make up that $6 million that we are collecting in taxes. Is that
yes.
correct? Okay. The next question that I have is probably directed to the development team. We have heard about phasing of this particular project. Can someone walk me through phases at this time? Is that to be decided?
Dean Mark, Sterling Bay. The phasing will be market-driven based on tenant interest in different areas of the property. However, we know that there will be certain things that occur initially. The improvements to Dominick, improvements along the river wall on the Lincoln Yards north portion, improvements to the Lincoln Yards south park portion, those will all be in the initial phase of the development.
So we're talking infrastructure?
Infrastructure phasing will be environmental remediation will continue, river wall rebuilding will continue, and the improvements to Dominick will continue.
Okay. All right. I think probably my next questions would be directed to Alderman Hopkins. We have heard a conversation with regard to public meetings. Can you give me some ideas to the number of public meetings you have had over the course of this?
Excuse me. Yes. On this specific proposal, the first meeting that I had was in July of 2018. It was a large public meeting attended by over 500 people. We repeated that in November. We had another large public meeting. This one was attended by approximately 1,000 people. In addition to those two large public meetings, we had 6 focus groups, smaller breakout sessions, and probably in excess of 30 individual meetings between the various neighborhood associations and their delegations and the leadership from the development team over the period of the last 8 months.
Okay. Yes.
This process is not only about the Sterling Bay mm-hmm. Lincoln Yards development. I think it's important for everyone to understand especially when people use terms like rushed and so forth, that this process goes back to the very beginning of industrial modernization that we started back in 2016. So there were numerous meetings, dozens of meetings, hundreds of participants in the whole process of creating the North Branch Framework Plan, which is the basis of this plan. So while, yes, the specifics of this plan have been going on in excess of a year, and with formal meetings beginning in July, the actual process has been going on for almost 3 years now. So I think it's important to understand that point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Commissioner Reifman.
And actually, Chairman, if I could just follow up,
sure,
on that, Commissioner Reifman is exactly correct, but that was an intentional omission on my part in answering the question. I could talk about the first meeting that I had on this concept, which was in 2016, before there was such a thing as Lincoln Yards, before I even knew Sterling Bay would eventually be the buyer. We had a meeting in DePaul University attended by 300 people, and the specific purpose of that meeting was for the community to discuss its vision and its ideas for this site. Now, I'm not including that meeting in answer to your question, mm-hmm. just in recognition of the criticism that this process has generated, where people are saying it's rushed. So I'm not trying to inflate the number of meetings or expand the time period. I'm specifically isolating meetings that were held just on this Lincoln Yards proposal. And it was unveiled in all the specificity that you saw here today with the infrastructure mm-hmm. plus mm-hmm. the buildings, which we're not talking about. It was unveiled to the community in July of 2018. It was posted on the website, my website and LincolnYards.com also, at that time. And since that time, since July, the proposal has undergone a variety of revisions. All of those revisions have occurred in the full light of day. They have incurred as a transparent process, an interactive process that also featured six different neighborhood associations engaged with this dialogue, talking about it among their residents and among their membership and among their leadership, and two community surveys that my office conducted, in addition to a third community survey that one of the neighborhood associations conducted. So all this has happened since July. There's been a tremendous amount of public engagement, public dialogue, public feedback, significant changes to the plan, every one of them as a result of demands and requests from the community. So the reason I started my answer to your question in July is just simply to focus on this very rigorous community process we've had just on the Lincoln Yards proposal. It's a good process. I stand by it. I'm very proud of it. And I think the neighbors that have participated in it with me should be proud of it as well.
Thank you, Alderman. I have one final...
Ladies and gentlemen, the commissioners are asking questions. Vice Chair Newsom.
I have one final question directed to the alderman. We have received a number of letters of support, et cetera, as a commission that have been distributed to us. I saw you with two large binders. Can you give me an estimate as to the number of letters of support that you have received thus far in your aldermanic office?
Yes, in addition to those two community surveys that my office conducted online, we had probably around 800 responses to each. We've tabulated them all, and we've also encouraged people who didn't necessarily want to just respond to the survey to send their general comments and questions and feedback in email. We've compiled all of those. It's in excess of 5,000. The letters that I showed you in those two large binders, that's probably about 300 to 400 letters from a variety of supporters, many not even in the second ward, just people from all over the city weighing in on this in favor of it. So there's a variety of sources of support for this, and there has been for a considerable period of time. As I mentioned in my earlier remarks, anything of this size is never going to be unanimous either way. You're going to have supporters. You're going to have opponents. That's just the normal course of activity. But it seems that the opponents tend to make the most noise. They're the ones that are, interrupting other speakers today and generally being rude. But that doesn't mean they speak for the neighborhood. In many cases, they don't. I've been responding to all of the requests that I get to explain my position, and I'm always happy to respond to people who disagree with me and to explain why I think this is the right thing to do for the city, and I've tried to do that over a period of months, and I'm going to continue to do it. We're not done yet. Mm-hmm. This proposal, as you commissioners know, still needs to go to the city council before two different committees, finance and zoning, and ultimately the city council. So we're not done engaging with the community. I'm not done listening to the community, even those who disagree with the step that we're taking today, and I'm going to continue to tabulate all the responses, both pro and con, and they'll be a part of the record and ultimately the final decision.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I have one final comment, and it actually has already been directed to the commissioner. During the course of today's hearing, I heard a number of misstatements or misinformation that was being quoted, and I have asked him if he would address those in his remarks so that we do not leave here with misinformation. Thank you.
Commissioner Davis?
My questions stem from the community perspective. We have heard a lot of different people from different sides have comment. Is there a plan, I guess this goes to the developer, is there a plan in place to continue to engage the community? And what does that plan look like?
For the record, my name's Erin Lavin Kevin-Argy. I'm not certain if your question is with regard to diversity and inclusion or immediate neighborhood community, but if you don't mind, I'll answer both.
Well really, it's all of that.
All of the above.
Because all of the comments we have heard have not been of just one nature.
Yeah.
It has been from parks and public benefit. It has been from contractors who feel like
absolutely
they might be disenfranchised. It's from people who are concerned about development schedule. It's been a lot. And so what I'm wanting to hear is some understanding of what Sterling Bay plans to do to address some, any, all of those concerns on an ongoing basis.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to be able to answer that question. I have been engaged to develop the corporate social responsibility platform for Sterling Bay. Amongst it is the diversity and inclusion plan. Just for background about me a little bit, I ran the Public Building Commission of Chicago for 10 years and worked for Sterling Bay for over 3.5 years until starting my own company. So I have intimate experience not only in diversity and inclusion and community engagement, but also very specific to the inner workings of Sterling Bay. And so let me just start by thanking the commissioners and thanking the body. I'm a passionate advocate for diversity and inclusion in our industry, which is underrepresented, no question about it. There are systemic issues that surround diversity and inclusion as it relates to construction and professional services. So what I can tell you is with the full buy-in and commitment of Sterling Bay is we've developed the platform that you have, or should have, I hope, in front of you. You have a program statement that begins to outline about 5 major points that we've developed. And there's a lot more detail that goes behind it, but this was a synthesized thought process. And so the 5 tenets that make up the community engagement, diversity and inclusion components, include stakeholder engagement. As you heard from many of the speakers, many of whom are members of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee, we want to have an ongoing, not just a one and done, but an ongoing engagement with the community around workforce, around construction participation. To wit, Sterling Bay has made firm commitments that you see articulated in the statement itself to diversity and inclusion in construction contracting and professional services, to supply chain diversity and inclusion within building operations and maintenance. And I'm going to unpack all of these just with a little bit of detail as well, because I think that's important. And commitment to small, diverse, and community-based businesses, as well as commitment to workforce development. What's been particularly heartening about this process and putting words to it is that this is really about framing existing practices within Sterling Bay. You heard from a number of different speakers that well before there was an executive order or well before there were any other components requiring diversity, you heard Rodrigo Descoto speaking today. You heard that the Google headquarters, which was reskinned to turn it into what is now called 1K Fulton, had significant participation by minorities and women. This was before any kind of requirement. This was a really inherent strong-held belief by Sterling Bay of diversity within construction. And just so I don't misquote it, and I'm getting old, so forgive me. Sterling Bay paid nearly $11.5 million to minorities and women-owned businesses on that project. So this is impressive not only because of the sheer scale of the number, but typically in core and shell delivery developers, unlike residential developers, and Sterling Bay is well known as a core and shell developer, you're doing only a limited amount of trade. So having that kind of financial spend on minority and women is very important. And I will tell you this, on active projects already in construction, diversity is key. On 333 North Green, you heard a number of different players today speak who are actively involved in the project. There are over 22 minority and women-owned businesses who've been engaged as well, and that they are exceeding every goal for minority and women-owned business on the project itself. But I wanted to sort of zoom out a little bit on some major tenets that frame the discussion around community engagement, diversity. We stand here at an amazing transitional point, not only with administrations, but as it relates to workforce. We have an aging population in the skilled trades. The average age is 54 years old. There are a lot of people who are going to be retiring in the coming years, and there are a lot of people underrepresented in our workforce. It sounds to me like the perfect opportunity to engage and have workforce that is reflective of the communities in which we build. And so the way that Sterling Bay has crafted the diversity and inclusion goals that are articulated in what you have in front of you is at multiple different tiers and with multiple different engagements. This isn't just at construction. This is also in the professional services. And I'll offer that already more than 15 professional service providers who are diverse or women-owned businesses have been engaged on the Lincoln Yards project itself. That's Lincoln Yards only specifically. That's represented in soil borings, in architecture. You heard Cesar Santoy today, who is not only on the development team, but he holds a prime contract. So the other thing that's really important to Sterling Bay and to me personally is that it's about capacity building. It's not just about a subcontractor position. It needs to be a prime position. It's not just about diversity inclusion at the construction level. It needs to be holistic and also include the professional services. So we consider this not a project-by-project basis, although this is how and each bite at the apple needs to be taken, but a portfolio-wide program. You heard today from Tactical Security and Landmark Pest Management, among others. There are dozens of diverse and women-owned businesses that manage or help the management team for Sterling Bay. What many people may know, you know, Sterling Bay as is building McDonald's headquarters or building Google headquarters. Sterling Bay is a relative newcomer when it comes to construction. What Sterling Bay's strength and scale has been surrounding is 10 million square feet of managed properties. So they're huge investors, they're huge managers. So 10 million square feet with the acquisition of Prudential and 600 West Chicago. So there are dozens of women and minority companies who are already working with the Sterling Bay management arm. And so there's a commitment not just on the level of construction, not just on the level of professional services, but a more holistic, well-rounded. You heard today from Shirley Jones from Lambent. We've been working really closely with insurance brokerage, our group, which is Aon Insurance, and they are part of the Five Forward program you may be aware of. Chicago United has a program where majority larger firms or adopt five different companies and engage them in a way that helps build capacity. That's what this whole platform's about. It's about capacity building and engagement, and not just one and done, but a duration, a long-term investment. This is a 10-year commitment to build, so this has to be a 10-year, if not more, relationship.
I appreciate that response. Thank you very much. I just want to go down a little bit deeper, finer point. So you mentioned $11.5 million. I think that was the number that you threw out. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put the wrong words in your mouth. I guess what I'm trying to understand is you talked about portfolio-wide.
Sure.
What does that represent in terms of Sterling Bay's commitment portfolio-wide? I suspect when you say $11.5 million, I can't really understand what percentage of that really means that Sterling Bay's portfolio is engaged in minority and women-owned business. Is that 10% of it? Does that mean it's 55% of it? What does that represent?
So the
approximately.
Challenge, I'll tell you the specific 11.5 reference was to the Google building, 1K okay. Fulton.
So I don't mean just Google. I mean
I wanted to just make sure I was clear on that point, which I believe was about a $60-65 million project. So that's well over 20%. But at the portfolio level itself, I can't give you the historic statistics because unlike public sector, we don't use B2G Now or LCP tracking, which are just software programs that are out there. The commitment level has been to definitely meet and exceed the 26 and 6. But at this point, we are on the road to that.
Are you keeping track of that going forward in any way?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's just not been something that... the resources have been put into, check every box and count everything in the past, but certainly
project,
going forward.
For this project, sure. There are two facets of it. There's the infrastructure goals that the TIF legislation requires per the ordinance. So all the flat work will have those goals through CDOT and how Sterling Bay does this, but all the vertical construction as well, for the plan commission requirements, has that
exactly.
As well. And so those are always seen as the minimum, the 26 and 6, but your goal is to surpass that for everything vertical. So there's
exactly.
There's two components to this involvement, that's part of the TIF and those infrastructure improvements, but then once that's done and the buildings come out of the ground, that'll include it also.
Exactly. And I want to add one more, just a couple points about workforce development. We are partnering with other areas. So there's power and leverage and communal working. And so we're talking to private entities as well as public entities. CFL spoke to this today about a workforce hub that Sterling Bay is helping to fund and move forward. It's a really important component about working and leveraging those relationships to capacity build. Because if you work on one particular project and then go away, that's not what the goal is here. We're hoping that people go from project to project to project. And so we're hoping for investment in careers and not just jobs themselves. We're also addressing re-entering population, as Kara testified to today. Over 34 buildings that Sterling Bay owns and manages are assisted through the work of Kara and their entity Clean Slate. So they do a lot of the landscaping, a lot of the snow removal, a lot of other things to engage at that level. But it's even bigger and greater than that. You heard word from the Chicagoland Association of General Contractors, who among MacArthur and the Trust have brought together all sorts of developers from around the city of Chicago to help address the systemic issues that surround our industry and the lack of representation there. And so we're active participants in that program.
Thanks, Aaron.
My last question was, and just a point of clarification if I could get it. You were asked by Commissioner Butler, not you, the gentleman was asked about the senior management team, because from my perspective, the senior management team are the ones who traditionally are the ones who make the important decisions and have kind of the purse strings at hand. He said that it was, I think he said, whatever numbers he said, is not what's represented on the website. When I look at the website, it's a senior management team that's all white male, one woman, and one looks to be a minority gentleman. So I just want some clarity as it relates to the senior management team and Sterling Bay's commitment really to the folks making the decisions being of a diverse population as well.
Sure. Dean Mark, Sterling Bay. Sterling Bay is very committed to having a diverse and inclusionary workforce and senior management team, and we strive to promote internally and also develop our personnel internally as they come up to grow to senior management team. Now, with that said, I know the website that you're looking at, it was recently reconfigured, and it will have some work to do on that front, frankly. The ownership of the projects is where we like to focus beyond senior management team, where on a project-by-project basis, every employee in the company is offered the chance to participate, and then on specific projects, it's key employees. And so that's the distinction we're making.
Commissioners, any other questions?
I'll take that response, but I don't know that really...
Commissioner Buford?
Yeah, I'm The one thing we haven't really talked about, and maybe it's very early in the process, but I'm very low on the learning curve right now. What is the long? What do you see as the greatest challenges going forward regarding the financial success of the project? I mean, you've got demand for apartments, for homes. I guess, do you get single-family homes in the project? Is there any possibility of that? The outlook for commercial, office, retail. I mean, you're going over 10 years. That could be a couple of cycles yet to come. So you've got financing. You've got not the cost of the infrastructure, the overruns. What are your biggest problems as you look forward?
Dean Mark, Sterling Bay. Those are excellent points. The macroeconomic cycle that we're in right now, and at the tail end of the cycle that everyone believes we're in, is the biggest challenge we're facing. Getting the project approved and running while we have the momentum and ability to do so is a key hurdle to overcome for us. We know the project has to weather multiple economic cycles, and we have the economic partners to do that with J.P. Morgan and Lone Star, candidly. We've positioned the project for long-term success. But there's no mistake about the headwinds the project faces.
Commissioner Thomas?
My first question is actually to the department. Can you remind me of how the Affordable Housing Fund is used?
So, Chip Hastings, Department of Planning. Before I address your question, I just want to mention, it was brought to my attention that I misstated the size of the projected build-out of Linky Yards as part of my presentation. So I just wanted to mention that the two planned developments approved by Plan Commission allow for a total of 15 million square feet. I just want to make sure that was in the record since I misstated that number. So to answer your question, the affordability requirement will be 20% of the units built on site. Per the PD, they have the ability to construct up to 6,000 units. So 1,200, that's where the up to comes from, up to 1,200 units will need to meet affordability requirements. We don't have a final plan in terms of the ARO. We fully expect that we'll be able to roll that out before we present to City Council. That'll be memorialized in the redevelopment agreement. And hopefully that answers your question.
No, it didn't.
Commissioner Reifman?
Commissioner Thomas, if I understand your question correctly, there's two ways, basically, that affordable housing can be, you can either provide it or you can pay. And funds that are paid are divided equally, 50% towards monies in the low-income housing trust fund and 50% towards various programs, including multifamily housing. So we have multifamily developments. We have programs like our building homes in affordable neighborhoods, various things that monies go to. Now, in this particular project, as Chip said, we've talked about up to 1,200. That's a function of how many units are actually built. So it has to be 20% in this particular case. The plan development provides for a certain number to be on-site, a certain number that can be off-site within 3 miles in nearby neighborhoods, and a certain amount to be paid into funds that can be used on citywide affordable housing. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Earlier, Commissioner Davis, thank you, Commissioner. Earlier, Commissioner Davis asked questions. I thought I heard this question regarding the follow-up with the community over the 10 years of the development. I don't think I heard the answer to this, so this question is probably more with Sterling Bay. What is the plan to keep the community involved with each phase of the 10-year development?
Sure. Thank you, Dean Mark, Sterling Bay. With each site plan approval, we have to come back into City Council to get the get that particular project approved. That will entail a re-engagement with
the community. Excuse me, Dean, just a second. It's the Plan Commission.
Sorry. Plan Commission. That entails us re-engaging with the community groups to discuss what is going on and what we're building in that particular site plan. Beyond that, I think one of the questions was regarding governance of the park, which I know there's some discussion around. Upon completing the park, there'll be a Parks Advisory Council formed of various local community stakeholders, which will help to govern and manage the park in accordance with park district guidelines.
Commissioner Thomas, are you still?
I have one other question, but it sounds like
Commissioner Newsom, Vice Chair Newsom, go ahead. Did you want to
Crafted.
I just wanted to follow up on that particular question in that while Sterling Bay will continue to interact with the community, I am assuming that Alderman Hopkins will continue his meeting process as well to address some of the issues that have been raised. Is that correct?
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, that is correct. As a matter of fact, in the last 2 weeks, I've had three different meetings with several of the residents' associations in the neighborhood. When we started this process, again, going back to July of 2018 and before, I assembled six residents' associations from the immediate surrounding area, the closest geographic neighborhoods to the Lincoln Yard site. We brought them all together, and then we added two advocacy groups, Friends of the Parks and Friends of the River, and basically said, you guys are the additional stakeholders. We're going to count on your voices. We're going to count on your ability to outreach to your members and get them engaged. So we've continued to do that. They've met with me. They've met also individually with representatives of Sterling Bay, and I just want to point out that that's somewhat unique in aldermanic politics. I intentionally stepped out of my role as a middleman, and I told each one of these six neighborhood associations, I need you to have a direct relationship with Sterling Bay. You can sit down, you can call them, you can go into their office and see their charts, their graphs, their renderings, anytime you want. You don't need my permission to do it. And that's been ongoing. It hasn't always resulted in letters of support or endorsement. As you heard, one of the neighborhood associations came today and testified and said some favorable things and also had some concerns. That has characterized this process since its outset. And I've continued that in the last couple of weeks, even after we got Plan Commission approval. As I said, that doesn't stop the dialogue and it doesn't stop the changes. As a matter of fact, just a few days ago, I met with one of those six organizations, and I won't name them, but I will say they had been by far the toughest critics all along, and they've expressed the most opposition. And I went and met with them in their full membership, and they offered several pointed suggestions that they wanted to see changed in the TIF presentation today. And I can tell you all of those changes were made in the last couple of days at the request of that community association. So that's just one example of how the community's input has actually had a profound and direct impact on this process, and it will continue going forward. Thank you for your question.
Thank you, Commissioner Thomas, for allowing me to interrupt you.
Absolutely, Commissioner. My last question, Mr. Chairman, is also to Sterling Bay. Commissioner Davis and Butler asked about the senior management team of Sterling Bay and the diversity of it. Did you say there are 22 staff that will work on this project?
Dean Marks, Sterling Bay. I don't think that was a statement we made. 22 staff, did you say?
Yeah, from Sterling Bay.
No, the entire company will be working on this project.
Okay, so I think what I'm most concerned with is making sure that minorities and women have an opportunity to gain experience working on this project. This is a large project. And from the management perspective, not from outside contractors, I'm looking from the management perspective within your company that they have an opportunity to gain experience. So when I listen to what your percentages are, I'm trying to figure out who's working on this and what those percentages are and how many employees that would be.
This will be an entire company effort, candidly, over the next 10 years. This is currently 225 employees across the board. Yeah, everyone will be working on this project.
To me, it just seems like an incomplete answer to my question, but
if you re-ask the question, I'll try and answer it again.
Okay, so what is the, maybe I should understand again, what is your, how many blacks do you have, how many Hispanics, how many women?
So diversity by gender is 56%.
What does that mean in numbers?
In numbers, 105 women in the company, if I have to do the math off the top of my head.
105 approximately.
Approximately.
And how many of those are senior management?
Right now, one. We can do better. So
that's women.
So I'm sorry, actually, I want to take that back. Women in senior management include all of the director-level employees, which includes the entire legal directory team as well as the principals. So that's 10, frankly.
10 senior management?
Correct.
Women?
Women.
Which is 56% of your...
56% of the overall company.
Okay. Black.
I don't have it broken down by ethnicity specifically. So by minority, 12%.
Okay, so I'm interested in black and Hispanic and other groups, and not just by percentage, but actual numbers.
Because then after
you tell me overall, I'm interested in the senior management so that, because I'm really interested in who's getting the experience on this large project.
I think the best answer we can give there, Commissioner, is that we promote from within. We want everyone in our company to have the opportunity to work on a project of this size and scale. Candidly, looking at the website that I know you're looking at, I think that the only answer I can give to that question is that we can and will endeavor to do better.
Good afternoon, Council. My name is Shelley Burke. I am Senior Associate Counsel and Director of Diversity, Community Engagement and Diversity Compliance. I have been with Sterling Bay. Sorry. Okay. I've been with Sterling Bay for 5.5 years. When I started at Sterling Bay, I started as Associate Counsel. I've been given ample opportunities to work on projects. I've had ample opportunities to work on acquisitions, dispositions, joint ventures, and other projects at Sterling Bay. There hasn't been a project at Sterling Bay that I haven't had an opportunity to work on if I asked for it. As part of this Lincoln Yards project, I have stepped up and I asked Dean Marks if I could take the position of Director of Community Engagement and Diversity Compliance, because this project is important to me and to Sterling Bay. It's important that we make sure we engage minority contractors and subcontractors. It's important that we have women in our company that get additional experience, and I am taking on that charge to make sure that we are doing so. So yes, maybe our numbers aren't as great as they should be, but I am taking a personal dedication into this project to make sure that we continue to grow our numbers of women and minorities working in that, and that we engage new and continue to use past subcontractors and contractors that we've used in the past.
Okay. Thank you for that answer, and good luck with that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Commissioners, any other questions? Hold on. Commissioner Alphonse, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman. I just have a series of questions related to training. There was a schedule that was shown earlier. I think it was a schedule that had a $900 million budget with $25 million associated with training. I just wanted to confirm that the developer, just based on everything that I've seen here, it looks to me as if the developer is committing to covering the $25 million that was presented in that budget. I just want to confirm that that's correct.
So, again, Chip Hastings, I believe the budget you're referring to is the budget that will appear in the TIF plan. Total is $900 million. There are five different line items. I just want to clarify the total for a little bit of background before I try to answer your question.
Yep.
The total can't change. Dollar amounts can be moved among the line items. So, for instance, if job training is something that requires more than $25 million, we can certainly do that as long as we include the line item in the plan. The intention behind it...
Hold on, Chip, just a second.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I want to get directly to the question. And the point is, when you're talking about the minority hiring that Sterling Bay is committing to in the redevelopment agreement and otherwise, that has nothing to do with the $25 million you're seeing here. That's at their cost in connection with the project stuff. The $25 million here is opportunities for additional job training. This is 168 acres, this TIF district. The Lincoln Yards project is only $55 million of that TIF district. So there will be opportunities for more job training, TIF works, other things like that as a budget item.
Right. So just to be clear, the 25 is specific, is just general training.
It's an estimate, and it could be allocated over a period of time for all kinds of job training opportunities throughout for people throughout the city, whether or not related to Sterling Bay's project within this area.
So it's general, but not specific to the.
It's not being allocated right now. It's part of the there's two things I think we should be understanding. Number one, we're talking about approving a plan, which is a larger document, which is the blueprint for how we move forward, and the designation of what we're doing with Sterling Bay for the development of specific infrastructure for $490 million. And over time, elements of that plan can be implemented. So that $25 million would be something to occur in the future.
Got it. So we should we or should we not expect a commitment from the developer to be part of that $25 million?
Unclear. The developer's commitment is they must do 26 and 6 on the public infrastructure. They need to achieve 26 and 6 on private improvements through the plan development. Whether or not that $25 million will intersect with that commitment, likely not. It's more like job training, TIF works, other things for companies that come in is the typical way we would use that kind
of
money.
Got it. So then maybe you can clarify how we got to the 25, just for my benefit. Is it just a percentage of the overall budget expense?
To answer your question, the budget reflects our priorities. Obviously, public works, public infrastructure improvements is the priority. But again, we wanted to include the line item itself so that in the future we have the flexibility to fund it. So the dollar amount itself is not based on any specific projection. It's a placeholder for future investment in job training.
Got it. All right, thank you.
Secretary Butler.
I have a follow-up question for the developer. I haven't heard, I think, a crisp answer to what process, procedures, structure the developer is putting in place to address community concerns outside of diversity and inclusion. We heard concerns regarding traffic, regarding parks. This is a very large project, and it's unclear. I know that the alderman is going to continue to have hearings as we go throughout the development process, but it's unclear to me what structure the developer has in place that will be institutionalized so that the community concerns that we heard addressed here today will be addressed, as opposed to just kind of, you can drop into the developer's office and talk with anyone who's available to speak with you about your specific concerns. What is Sterling Bay putting in place so that the community that will be impacted by this development can be assured that there is an environment in which they can have their concerns addressed, given the scale and the length of this project?
And before you comment, because I think we've been trying to get the same answer to the same question, Dean, as a part of your answer, could you really, if you've done this, could you outline specifics? We understand the paper that's been put before us. We understand what the alderman has said. But for a project of this size, with the number of people who came to discuss it, it just seems as though having something that is specific, not general, would be important in order to allay some of these concerns. Because I don't think we should just move forward without addressing specifically some of those concerns, just like we've been saying.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, just go ahead.
For the record, Katie Jenke-Dale from DLA Piper, counsel for the developer. So specifically the structure that has been in place, I think we could point to the plan development. So as Dean said, and I'll go into more specifics on that, with each site plan that we come in for, it will go through the full review process that we would typically go through before plan commission. So that includes submitting to CDOT, for example, updating the traffic study, getting their comments on the traffic study, making further updates to finalize it, going to the fire department, working with the alderman's office to go through whatever community process is warranted by that site plan approval that's being requested. If it's a single-story retail building, some community groups may not be as interested. If it's three office buildings for a new corporate relocation, maybe it would be a more robust process, depending on the scale. But that's all baked into the plan development. And once we get all those department sign-offs, we then go back to the Chicago Plan Commission to make a presentation and, again, elicit formal public testimony at that meeting as well. And that's all baked into the plan development.
Ladies and gentlemen, please, could you please keep quiet? We're trying to finish the questions here. Secretary Butler?
That sounds reactive to me versus being something that you're putting in place in anticipation of this multi-phase mm-hmm. process that you're putting in place.
Hold on, Secretary Butler. Go ahead, Commissioner Reifman.
Yeah, I think it's important. Excuse me, please. I think it's important to point out, and Commissioner, I appreciate your question, and I don't know that you're going to get a more specific answer right now, but I think when you look at the comments of Armando Chacon and the experience of Sterling Bay and the West Loop, that's indicative of the way in which they've interacted with the community. Each project has come back for a full community process. Each project has secured community support. So they do have a track record of directly engaging on issues like development, traffic, architecture, site plan, development. I think this is the first time I believe you've ever done a TIF project. Is that correct? So they will have to develop the experience that you're talking about here in connection with that. And we will, by the way, there will be a redevelopment agreement. They will be held to specific legal standards. They will have to monitor. They will have to demonstrate each one of these items that you're concerned about. So I believe, and you know, again, with Alderman Hopkins sitting here, I don't believe there's any intent that I think what Sterling Bay needs is a level of certainty. What we need as a city is a level of certainty, which is the baseline for moving forward in a more involved, ongoing process. I hope that's more helpful to your question.
It is very helpful. It's extremely helpful, and I think, you know, given the scope of this project as compared to the other projects that the developer has completed, I think you understand our concerns that this is, you know, an area that we are highly sensitive to, and I think that there's some learnings going on here based on all the public testimony we heard here today that I would encourage the developer just to really reflect upon what you've heard and to put in place a process that will assure that the community's concerns will be addressed. And that's my suggestion to you.
Commissioner Griggs, you had a question?
I first want to start with discussing diversity, and I would like to give Shelley the floor one more time to really explain her role in the diversity and inclusion efforts inside of Sterling Bay. And to my fellow commissioners, I do that because I've seen Shelley in action, and I know what she does, and she's very committed to it, whether she was at Sterling Bay or not. I know it would be something at the forefront of her heart, so I would like for you to really help my commissioners understand your role, where you've come from, and how this particular role at Sterling Bay impacts you.
Thank you very much. Shelley Burke, Sterling Bay for the record. So my role is going to take on several aspects. One aspect I'll be working on is ensuring that we're fostering strong relationships with the MBE community, making sure that they have opportunity to bid on projects and are aware of all of the projects that are coming up. Another aspect that I'll be working on is overseeing that we are working with the advisory council to make sure that we are in acting best practices to ensure that we are engaging the minority workforce. We are also working with two schools to make sure that they have an opportunity to come to Sterling Bay and have internships so that they understand how the process works when you have an opportunity to work in construction abroad when it comes to accounting, asset management, the legal aspect as well. We also will be working with CFL to work on a workforce development and to ensure that we are creating a new generation of diverse workforce in the city of Chicago, as well as several other programs. But this is a mission that is very important to me, and I know that this is an opportunity to create economic development for businesses that are based in the South Side and West Side of Chicago.
Shelley Burke.
Thank you, Ms. Burke.
Awesome. Thank you, Shelley. Sure, go right ahead.
Commissioner Griggs, you're done with the questions?
I have a couple other questions, but she wants to piggyback
on that. Go ahead. Commissioner Thomas, go ahead.
In particular, and it's more of a comment that I want you to keep aware of opportunities for minorities within a majority firm to get the kind of experience that others are getting in a majority firm, so that you're not just looking at minority companies, but you're also looking at opportunities for minorities within a majority firm to get the kind of experience that they should on a project this large.
Absolutely agree with you on that point. We also will be hiring some additional staff to help with this project, Lincoln Yards, as you're aware that it's a 10-year project. So that's definitely something that we will keep in mind to make sure that we're hiring diverse workforce as we continue to build on the Lincoln Yards project.
Thank you, thank you, Commissioner Griggs.
Commissioner Davis, you wanted to jump in on this too?
As well. Thank you for enlightening us as to the role that you'll be playing. My question, I guess, and my comment really is, as Dean has already said, clearly Sterling Bay has some room to grow as it relates to its senior management and the role that senior management will play, diverse senior management. How is it that you will be able to foster some of the things that you're saying? I have no doubt that you have the desire to do that. My concern is just whether or not you have the backing and the consideration of the folks who are in the management team and who are making the decisions in order to move that ahead. That's why I bring it to the forefront, because as somebody who has been minority in a majority firm, I understand that the desire to do good can only go as far as those who have the ability to say yes. And so what is it that you see as your ability to your ability or anybody else's ability who you bring on to be able to move things forward in a way that hasn't happened thus far as we look at what the senior management team looks like? I'm not discounting all the good things we have heard, and they were very, very heartening to hear some of the diverse contractors and union people saying very good things about Sterling Bay. I'm not discounting that at all. I'm more jaded than you. And so I just want to understand how you envision that working.
Yeah, so just to give you a little bit of my background, before I came to Sterling Bay, I worked at a large law firm. I was the only Black associate in my department. It was a place that did not support my career, and I knew for me that I had to move on to somewhere else that was going to support my career if I was going to build the type of career that I wanted to and really do something impactful in the community. So when I first came to Sterling Bay, I was just about 4 or 5 years out of law school. It was only two other attorneys there, Dean and one other woman by the name of Anna, and they have been extremely supportive of my career. I've gotten a lot of opportunities to work on things that I know that I wouldn't have had in the law firm. Not only that, since I've been there for 5.5 years, I have built trust with people like Andy Glore, who's the head of it, where they trust my judgment. And so I have the opportunity now to really state things that I think that Sterling Bay needs to do in order for us to make this a great economic development opportunity for the Black and Brown community here in Chicago. I went to Dean after we had our first meeting, and I said, Dean, I need a new position at Sterling Bay. I need to become the Director of Community Engagement and Diversity Compliance to ensure that we are really saying that we're going to do what we are. He said, not a problem. He gave me the opportunity to have that title and to step into this position and to stand here before you today. So I have no doubts that we will do a good job of engaging the minority Black and Brown community.
Okay. Thank you.
Cornelius. I'm sorry, Commissioner Griggs, I apologize.
Getting late.
Sorry, we've been here 5 hours. Commissioner Griggs, I'm my...
thank you, Chairman. And thank you, Shelley, for those great remarks. We know you're going to do a great job. My next comment or series of questions is around affordable housing. Being a resident of affordable housing for 18 years and growing up in Cabrini Green, I have a soft spot for individuals in the affordable housing space because I still have family that live in affordable housing and have been displaced by affordable housing. So I heard the number of what could, on a high end, be 1,200 affordable housing units. And I guess this is directed at the developer and also for Alderman Hopkins. I first want to start by asking Alderman Hopkins, do you know how many affordable housing units you have in your ward total?
Under the changes to the ARO from 2 years ago, I believe we've had probably somewhere around 100 units that have been created as a result of that. I can't give you a specific inventory of the affordable housing units that have been built in my ward, but I can tell you if this plan passes as is and those affordable units are created, we will have probably had the most in terms of affordable housing units created in the city in the last 2 years.
Awesome. And the purpose of me asking that question was to really get for the folks in the chamber today to really understand the magnitude of the development and how many affordable housing units will be created in a ward that right now, per the alderman, has about 100 affordable housing units. So you're talking about the opportunity to create nearly 1,200 affordable housing units. Now, understanding that all of those units may not be on the site of the development, but there's still an opportunity to create within the city of Chicago 1,200 affordable units. Now, when I think about affordable units, because I deal with affordable units across the country, there's this thing called AMI, right? And I would like for the developer to talk about what the AMI would be on the units that are associated with the development in Lincoln Yards.
Yep. Just a second, Commissioner Reifman.
So let me answer your question if I can, Commissioner.
Awesome.
This is under ordinance. So because it's TIF with 20%, they have to do half of their obligation at 60%, half of their obligation at 50%. So depending on what the number they actually create, that would be the ratio, and whatever's paid out would be a specific formula.
Awesome. Perfect. So with that being said, as we think about this particular development, this is not a question, it's just a comment, there are a ton of great impacts here. Of course, hearing what's been said across the board from both folks on one side of the aisle and the other side of the aisle, we understand that with a development this large, there are going to be folks who are for it and those who are against it. I think me speaking from a affordable housing perspective, this will have a great impact on the city of Chicago for folks who are going to need affordable housing units, whether they live in Lincoln Yards or they get the 50% that is paid into the low-income housing fund to help build other affordable units across the city. I don't see how we don't support an opportunity to put folks who grew up in places like I grew up back inside of these communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Griggs. All right, last call. Questions, commissioners? Comments? If not, there being no further questions or comments from the commissioners, I'm going to adjourn the public hearing portion of this meeting and reconvene the regular meeting of the CDC. So the first resolution before us recommends approval of the redevelopment plan for the proposed Cortland Chicago River Tax Increment Financing Redevelopment Project Area. Recommend designation of the Tax Increment Financing Redevelopment Project Area, and recommend adoption of the Tax Increment Financing for the area. Do I have a motion? So moved by Commissioner Buford. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Secretary Butler. And I'll call the roll. Commissioners in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed signify by saying nay. Commissioner Alphonse.
Aye.
Commissioner Buford.
Aye.
Commissioner Davis. Mr. Griggs?
Aye.
Mr. Newsom?
Aye.
Commissioner Reifman?
Aye.
Commissioner Rhodes?
Aye.
Commissioner Thomas?
Aye.
Commissioner Perez votes aye. Secretary Butler, I apologize. I did this again.
Aye.
I'm so sorry. Again, the motion is carried. Before I call the second item for a vote, I need to correct the name of the development entity. It was previously named Cortland Chicago River Partners LLC, but it should be Alloy Property Company LLC and Fleet Portfolio LLC. Therefore, the second resolution requests authority for the Department of Planning and Development to negotiate a redevelopment agreement with Alloy Property Company LLC and Fleet Portfolio LLC for the redevelopment of the property known as Lincoln Yards, bounded by Besley Court and Webster, Clybourne and North Avenues in the Cortland, Chicago River Tax Increment Financing Redevelopment Project Area, and to recommend to the City Council of the City of Chicago the designation of Ally Property Company LLC and Fleet Portfolio LLC and or a related entity as developer. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
So moved by Secretary Butler. Do I have a second? Seconded by Vice Chair Newsom. I'll now call the roll. I will call your name. Commissioner Butler.
Yes.
Commissioner Alphonse.
Yes.
Commissioner Buford. Commissioner Davis?
Yes.
Commissioner Griggs?
Yes.
Commissioner Newsom?
Yes.
Commissioner Reifman?
Yes.
Commissioner Rhodes?
Yes.
Commissioner Thomas?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez votes yes, and the motion is carried. Ladies and gentlemen, could you please let me finish? I do want to take an opportunity to recognize Commissioner Alphonse. Thank you for your duty, your service to the commission over the last several years. We really appreciate it. So thank you very much. I would now like to request a motion to adjourn. Do I have a motion? So moved by Commissioner Alphonse. Do I have a second? Seconded by Commissioner Newsom. All those in favor signify by saying aye. And the motion is carried. The meeting is adjourned. Congratulations, Mr. Glura and team.